Hey guys, just quickly before we get into this episode, we want to put out a little bit of an explanation. We were supposed to release this episode like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Actually, we were supposed to release this episode a year and a half ago, but we'll get into that in the episode. There was some slight delay issues with the episode, and we were meant to have an episode in between for you guys for Christmas, where I actually flew home to Ireland and we were all together, but there was a thousand disasters with me returning to Ireland. I eventually got there, but there just wasn't enough time to plan and record an entire episode in that time because we didn't even know if I'd make it anymore. Basically, as usual, a whole bunch of disasters befell us. I got COVID and it's just been a whole hell of a time. So that's why we haven't been releasing the last couple of weeks, but don't worry, we're still here. We've got this episode that should have come out all those weeks ago for you guys to enjoy today, and we'll be back in the next week or two, mid-January. We are coming back. We're just disasters as always, and we'll fill you guys in on the whole story once we return. We hope everyone had a great Christmas and a happy new year. And I guess I'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. Enjoy the episode.
Bitch, a third fucking
I'm so not looking forward to this, man. There's just no way it's going to
Listen. No, I'll actually be shocked if it does. I actually truly will.
I don't care how this episode goes. The audio can be completely inaudible and it's going up. It's being uploaded because I don't fucking care. I'm not fighting this bitch a third time.
No, so we decide we're doing Mary fucking Bell. Maybe it'll work though this time because it's me and you trying instead of me and Lizzie.
This is true, actually.
Maybe Lizzie's bad vibes because she hated the little bitch so much.
It's Lizzie has been fucking it up this whole time. Imagine that was the thing. She just particularly hated Lizzie, so that's why we couldn't do the episode.
Wouldn't surprise me
either, to be honest. Lizzie does be testing these fucking spirits. As we figured out with Robert Hansen Part 2 when she fully manifesting all of the negative energy into the fucking episode.
Yeah. I'm going to Google funny questions to ask and I'm going to ask you two.
Go for it.
Co-workers, your girlfriend, your kids, you pick.
Probably co-workers. But then I feel like...
Rude.
Well, yeah, because girlfriend's That's a bit so too, ignorant. Like, it's probably weirdly sexual. And I feel like... I mean, you could ask me weirdly sexual questions. I don't fucking care. But like... and kids, I don't think, like... What colour blocks do you prefer to play with?
If you had an extra hour every day, what would you do with it? Obviously sleep an extra hour.
Genuinely, that's no argument. Like,
if you could be any supernatural creature, what would you be?
Ooh, I'd probably like shapeshifter.
Yeah, I'm the same. I always pick shapeshifting because it's the most obvious
yeah,
one.
Yeah, because I can just turn into anything I want then. Fucking turn into a cat and rob a bank. Class.
Okay, I've googled weird would you rathers. We're going to keep on the theme. Ew, would you rather have sex with a really, really disgusting ugly person or a lovely, beautiful, fresh corpse?
Oh, fuck.
I feel like I'm picking ugly.
I mean, yeah, I'd still like whatever I'm fucking to have a pulse. I'm just not into necrophilia, no matter how good looking the corpse is.
Oh, do you know what we'll do? Pick a number between 1 and 71. And I'll give you a random question.
Okay, 36.
Would you rather, this is obvious, would you rather give birth pain-free through your mouth or painfully through your vagina? Obviously mouth.
Wait, pain-free? Through the mouth?
Through your mouth.
Or painfully.
Or normally.
As it usually is. Through normally. The mouth. Yeah. Like, let me fucking just vomit out babies. But that's a no-brainer.
That's obvious.
Yeah. And if it's painlessly, then, like, what's to lose? Why would anyone go for, like, oh, give me... Do you know what it is? It would be those fucking women that are like, C-section babies aren't real babies. Because you didn't birth them properly. The way God intended. That's who wrote that fucking question. Those troglodytes.
Bad bitches.
I hate those women. I'm not even a mother and I hate them anyway.
It's also not true. It's like not a baby's true. A baby.
It doesn't matter. Like, it's cooked, is it not? Does it matter how it actually comes
out? Wasn't it in there for 9 months and didn't it come out grand?
Yeah, with your fucking Shakespearean fucking bullshit. Macduff was not born of woman.
Anyways, will we get into this bitch before something actually goes
wrong? Yeah, I'm way too nervous about this episode to be playing fucking Would You Rather. I'm also slightly manic because, last week for the listeners, but yesterday for you, you might recall me saying that I thought like I had flu symptoms just because I was exhausted. I'm actually sick. I'm not. It had nothing to do with the tiredness.
It was like me there with the sneezes the last day. I was like, if I get sick, I swear to God.
I'm glad it's this week. I'm very glad it's this week that I'm getting sick and not next week, because I have far too many important things to be doing next week.
Yeah, on the run up to Christmas is the last time. The further away from Christmas you are sick, the better.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially when you have shit to do.
I mean, it's me. There's every chance I could be sick every week between now and Christmas, but like...
Well, I mean, that's actually probably the most likely thing that's going to happen, but...
But it's fine. It's fine. I apologise for the... I feel like I can hear it in my voice, so I'm sure on the audio it sounds like...
You're just
well.
A little bit stuffy.
Just a
sounding,
touch, yeah.
But it's not bad.
Thank God. And coughs, but like obviously I'll be in and out the coughs.
Like so. It's a little bit noticeable, but it's not like the worst thing I've ever heard.
So it's definitely going to get worse by the end of this episode, but I just thought I'd fucking preface it with that. Do I call it? Do we just go for it?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's dive in.
So, Betty Bell. If I have to mention this, if I have to go through these notes one more time. Betty Bell was born in Glasgow in 1940 and was described as a deeply religious child, which is creeps me out.
Yeah.
Creeps me out. The idea of a religious child creeps me out.
Do you know what's worse though? That was me.
Like, I know it's because of why you're raised, whatever the fuck, but it just gives me the fucking heebie-jeebies the indoctrination vibes is so strong.
All I could see is like fucking Mormon documentaries that I've watched and all those little kids and they're just like, you know, or like Jesus Camp vibes. They're never normal kids.
What's that song? Who's in the house? JC, tell me who's in the house. JC.
Throwbacks to the weirdest dream I ever had because of you and Lizzie watching that fucking documentary.
Yeah, it was good though. I would recommend it. Children of Christ or something like that. Children of the Church or something like that. Let me Google it so people can listen.
Yeah, because you need, like, other people need to watch this. I think it's actually, isn't it the same thing that the fucking, my crew is big and it keeps getting bigger and I'm not going to sing the second line because we'll be cancelled.
Yeah!
I'm pretty sure that's
Jesus
the same
Camp.
Thing. Jesus Camp.
Jesus Camp.
Yes. It's Jesus Camp vibe. But, sorry, as a child who was, like, myself deeply religious, which I'm sure no one believes now, knowing the way I am, but, like, I was severely religious. I was raised in a very religious household, fully believed in the power of Christ and all that, loved going to Mass, fucking all of that shit. I was a weird little cunt, can confirm.
I didn't really hate Mass either. It didn't really bother me.
Oh, no, I loved it.
I was one of those kids that was like, I can't go. Like, I actually kind of enjoyed myself there. But I feel like that's because I have, like, maladaptive daydreaming tendencies, so I just was zoned the fuck out.
No, that's fair. No, I loved the whole, like, ritual of it and all. I felt like I was really part of something, like, proper cult vibes, you know? Because that's what I knew. Anyways, yeah, they're
anyways,
weird fucking kids
to
is my point.
Betty.
Yeah.
Born in Glasgow in 1914, she was really religious. Her mother said, we all thought she was going to be a nun. Her sister said she really liked religious things. She always drew nuns and altars and graves and cemeteries. So she was leaning gothic and then just went the wrong way.
Yeah.
She could have gone the right way and gone cool, but she didn't. She went the...
A very extreme way.
The not cool way. According to the family, so pinch of salt, there was no excessive punishments or abuse, but for some reason Betty began to drift away, like she drew into herself and she kind of drifted away from her family, you know, like her parents and her sister.
Mm.
And when her father died, Isa, her sister, said Betty was demented. She threw tantrums, she staged a drug overdose, and in 1957, so when she was just 17, she gave birth to Mary Flora Bell. She didn't actually know Mary's father.
Right.
Or she obviously knew who he was, but she probably didn't know if she was sleeping around because she was obviously rebelling quite intensely.
So she didn't know which one of the options.
She might have known specific which fella it might have been.
That's fair.
Or alternative, she might not have actually liked the fella and would have rathered him not have any involvement with her kid. Two options there. Or third is that she,
that she's lying and the father wanted fuck all to do with her. So she said, like, no, it was my choice.
Yeah.
So there's no daddy on the scene.
No daddy. But she ended up actually marrying a man named Billy Bell, when Mary was young. But like, as I said, there was no certainty that Mary was his. But he ended up marrying Betty and kind of taking Mary on as a daughter of his own.
Okay, so he knew like there was a possibility this wasn't his child. Or did he know straight up this was not his child?
Most likely wasn't. Okay. I think there was probably a lot of overlap between him and maybe a few other fellas. Like, she was only 17. He was probably quite young as well, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, like, it probably didn't really fucking matter.
Probably not.
Do you know, like, I'm presuming they weren't very well off, like, and you're back in the fucking 1950s, you know.
I mean...
In Glasgow, like, I feel like if you're poor in, like, England, Ireland, Scotland back then, there was a lot of, like, kids that were...
Illegitimate.
Exactly. Thank you. I was going to say bastards, but I feel like that's not the term anymore.
I think it's still actually acceptable. I'm not sure. I don't know if that one has been cancelled
yet. I feel like it's
yet.
Offensive. I feel like it's a little bit offensive, so I didn't want to use it, but that's the word I was like, it was on the tip of my tongue, and I was like, I really don't want to have to say that.
Yeah, illegitimate is the polite term, I think.
Yes, thank you. So Betty was really, like, not very fond of Mary. Like, she was really anxious to get rid of her. She'd drop her off with relatives, and the relatives, like, knowing what was going on in the house, like, knowing that Betty didn't want her, really, would really, like, beg Betty to just, can you just leave Mary with us? Like, we'll raise her, we'll take her on, you do whatever the fuck you want to do, and we'll raise her. But she kept coming back, which I don't understand, but whatever.
Ugh, probably selfishness. Like, didn't want to be seen as the one who gave up her child, but at the same time didn't want to have a child.
Yeah, you say that, but in 1960, so Mary was 3-ish, less, Betty brought Mary to an adoption agency and just handed her off to this, like, really, like, this woman who was, like, really upset because she was moving to Australia and they wouldn't let her adopt a child because she was moving. And she said, I brought this one in to be adopted, you can have her, and left her with the stranger. Her sister, so Betty's sister Isa, had followed Betty, knowing something was sus, knowing something was off, followed Betty, saw her handing her off to this random lady, and found the woman who, and it makes me sad, but the woman had already bought, like, pretty dresses for the baby, and, like, and I know it's wrong, blah, blah, like, obviously, you know, taking a child illegitimately, but at the same time, I can see back then, if you really wanted a kid, even now people probably would take the offer. If you really wanted a kid and someone was like, you can just have this one and you don't have to worry about adopting or nothing.
Yeah,
it's yours.
None of the bureaucracy. I would do it. Like, if I was desperate for a child and someone was just handing one to me, I'd be like, okay, I'll take that child. Like, clearly you're not loving it.
I just don't understand. One thing I don't get is why she would refuse to give Mary to her family members. But then I feel like it was spite.
Yeah.
I feel like Betty was probably a little bit bad-minded.
Because she definitely had some grudge against them from some stupid thing that they can't even think of what the reason might have been. So she's like, no, fuck you.
They mightn't actually, chances are they mightn't have been nice. That's an option too.
Oh, 100%.
And she didn't want her child to be raised in that, but she also knew she couldn't raise her own.
But I'm also like, if the sister, you know, and all that turned out grand and they've nothing bad to say about the family, why is it only fucking Betty that has issues, you know?
Because sometimes it's like that, like, Isa could have been like the golden child.
True. That's also true.
Do you know?
The one that wasn't Bet.
Yeah. And then, like, was the abuse on Betty hidden? You know? I'm not saying that's the fact, but...
No, but I can,
I
like,
mean, our job is to speculate.
Yeah. I can confirm, like, I know I can't really be saying names, but, like, born in the 60s, and that was definitely the case. Like, there was 5 fucking children, but she was the one who got Bet. Yeah. She was a whole child. You know what I mean? So it's not like she could have done anything
There's
particular.
Always, like, and not a least favourite, because that's so mean, but, like, a scapegoat.
Yeah. The Coleman's child. There's always a Coleman's child.
It's just the one that gets under the skin of the abuser a little bit more or whatever. Yeah. I'm not saying now, obviously, I don't know what the story is with Betty's, like, extended family, but it just is, it's an unusual situation. So is Betty bad-minded or is Betty kind of valid? We don't know.
Yeah, we can't judge there.
But this all, like, this arson around obviously fucked Mary up. And by the age of 2, she was already refusing to bond with others.
Oh.
And I don't know, I know that there's a name for it. What's that called when babies can't bond?
Oh, attachment disorder.
Yes, thank you. That was going to really piss me off.
I had to look it up myself. Attachment disorder. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's actually so fucking sad, like.
Obviously so insecure as a baby with, like, it's basically comes from, like, when your main caregivers as a child are very unreliable.
Yeah.
You find it hard to attach to people. Like, you find it hard to relate to other people and refuse to bond with other people.
I mean, it makes sense.
Because you're insecure as fuck. Mm. It's the whole thing of, like, probably the thought process behind it isn't the same or isn't as, like, deliberate, we'll say. But, like, you know, people even, like, now, if you have, like, a bad breakup, being like, oh, I'm never getting with anyone ever again.
Yeah.
And, like, being single on purpose. It's, like, the same kind of concept, but just, like, instinctual, like, a self-preservation thing of, like, if I keep bonding with these people, then they're just going
to
leave me.
Yeah. Like, my complete inability to miss people unless they've died. I'm, like, I don't, I just,
I can't.
I completely don't miss people, really. Like, it started
now
since
I moved. My thing would be, I don't either. I'd be like, oh, I wish Savannah was here to see this. Like, she'd really enjoy it. Like, her being here would really add to it, but I wouldn't necessarily miss someone. But I think that's the object permanence thing.
Yeah.
As well. Like, true. I feel like, I don't know. But anyways, yeah. So Mary was having a really tough time already as a small child, and she was starting to behave in, like, a really cold, like, detached kind of way, like, attached manner. Like, she wasn't, like, a friendly child.
Yeah.
Do you know? She never cried when she was hurt. She started lashing out really violently. She smashed her uncle's nose in with a toy at one stage.
Oui.
We're not really sure if it was her uncle or her actual uncle, as in, like, Betty's brother, or Billy, her stepfather, we'll say, because Betty had her children refer to him as their uncle, so she'd get extra funding.
Oh, right. Aha.
So she called him her uncle. They called him an uncle when he wasn't, because it was like a funding thing. It was a benefits thing. Mm-hmm. So there was like Uncle... What was his fucking name? Uncle B. What was his name? Uncle...
Barry. Billy.
What the
Bobby.
Fuck was his name? Billy. Was it? Why can I not see?
Billy Bell. That sounds right.
Billy no. Bell, yes. Yeah, so Billy was like Uncle Billy, because we'll get extra funding, we'll get extra benefits. But yeah, that's not really a point. It's not really, it was just like an interesting little fucking whatever.
No, but what is interesting is that a similar scam was also pulled in my family.
Not you being Mary Bell.
And not me not making this connection the last time we fucking talked about her either.
Okay, you need to start taking a tally of like how many similarities you have with
Mary. Oh my god, okay, so we're up to what, two, three? Three so far?
You have the religious child.
Although actually that's not Mary, drawing... that's fucking Betty.
That's Betty.
Although my mother was deeply religious, so I think we can class that one, because she was like still religious up until my father fucking ruined religion for her. So we'll mark that one down.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the fucking detachment and the fucking
uncle thing.
Yeah, the insurance benefit scam going on, or not insurance, the fucking social benefits scam going on in the fam.
I really hope you don't add a tally to this, but multiple family members and witnesses recall her mother attempting to murder her at only like 2 and 3 years of age. So.
It's okay. No, that one's not relatable. No.
For example, so some of these attempted murders, or murder attempts rather, were she at one stage accidentally, quote unquote, threw her out a window, gave her an excessive amount of sleeping pills, choked her, you know, just loads of like that kind of like vibe, like just very violent stuff. There was like a lot of different murder attempts on Mary at a young age.
How did she accidentally throw her out a window? Was it like a baby with the bathwater thing?
No, it's accidentally, as in she threw a baby out the window and then told the guards it was on, like, on accident. On accident.
How
by accident.
Do you...
Holy fuck.
That's the most Irish thing though.
She definitely just said that she like, oh, I dropped her. Like, I was leaning out the window and she fell. You know what
All
I mean?
Right,
it
Michael
wasn't
Jackson.
Like, I didn't accidentally throw, I feel like is the wrong word. Like, she accidentally
fell out the window.
Pushed
but
her out
a yeah,
fucking
okay.
window. Yeah,
Fair
yeah.
enough. Child was yeeted, but okay.
It's given Neville Longbottom's fucking... Do you remember that?
Oh my god.
And he turned into a ball and like bounced down the road. And yeah, it gets grim as fuck because Mary's mam, so Betty... used to like, there was like sex work vibes, like, I'm not really sure exactly, but she was like, you know, having men over at the house, and you know, she had clients, we'll say, and she used to actually offer Mary up to some of her clients at the age of as early as 4 or 5. She
was, I
was
going
to
say, she can't
men.
Be more than 5 at this stage, like,
no,
oh my god,
you know, the whole serial killer trifecta. Mary's fall out the window did obviously result in a bit of brain damage, you know.
Yep.
Like, as in obvious fucking Lee, like, she bounced off the ground and her head rattled,
and she was a full
so she obviously...
forming child, like, that's not a good time to fucking get a head injury, if ever.
So this bit of rattling obviously didn't do her any good.
I'm sure then you said she overdosed her on sleeping pills.
Yeah,
that probably would.
Well, she gave her an excessive amount. I don't think it was necessarily an overdose.
Well, overdose
but
is coming many
of
forms.
Mary won't,
like,
go to sleep, but
they're not always fatal, but they can be
pills.
Funky.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You shouldn't be giving sleeping pills to children unless
no.
they're prescribed.
Yeah.
I don't even know, do they prescribe sleeping pills to children? I feel like that's a bit much.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they'd sooner prescribe them something like
Ovaltine.
Yeah. You know, or a bit of fucking Nurofen or something. Something that's going to be like the equivalent of knockout gas to a child. Because sleeping pills are way too strong for children. Like, there's so many other things that could knock them out.
A bit of whiskey even if you're really stuck. Like, I'd rather a bit of Jameson in a child than I would then a sleeping pill.
Just
I truly
wet the fucking doddy like the mammies used to do back in the day to get their kids to sleep. Clearly didn't cause as much brain damage as a load of fucking sleeping pills would. I'd say I'd rather that. And I'm sure... this is the time as well when that was being done, like, normally. Like, that was the recommended thing to be done.
And it worked.
Yeah.
It probably fucked a lot of people up. There was, like, a massive surge in serial killers in the 70s. But...
it worked still.
You know.
Look, I mean,
exactly.
I don't think this child had
it
a chance
It did the job.
Way,
Sometimes so. You need a short-term solution.
Exactly.
Not everything has to be long-balling. Okay? Yeah. When Mary, you know, fell out the window, she specifically damaged her prefrontal cortex, where decision making occurs.
Ooh.
So her inhibitions, we'll say, were impacted.
Right. No impulse control then.
A lot less than she should
right.
have, we'll
okay.
say.
Okay. Not completely destroyed.
If she had an intrusive thought, she was more likely to act on it.
Right.
Many experts who have looked at Mary's case have really just kind of focused in on the fact that she suffered so much abuse at the hands of her mother as to, like, what led to her committing all these crimes. Like,
this is
the head injury didn't help, but she would have been fine with just the head injury if her mother hadn't been such.
So this is more of a nurture case than nature at all. Like, this is all to do with nurture.
They're saying nature definitely played a part, and like, she wouldn't have been as bad as she was if she hadn't fallen the way she did.
Okay.
She wouldn't have been the way she was if she hadn't been treated badly in the first place.
Okay, right, okay.
So it made her worse, but it's not why she was the way she was.
Okay.
Whereas you can say, like, you know, with a lot of the other killers that we've covered,
they would have been like that regardless.
Influenced it. Whereas with this, it's just a more case of,
she might have had a chance if Betty wasn't her man.
Her impulse control was not. And if you're seeing this much violence and you're being sexually assaulted at such a young age, and, you know, at a very young age, she actually also saw her 5-year-old friend get killed by a bus.
Oh.
Yeah. So I feel like if I was Mary.
Yeah.
You know, I see where she's coming from. Like, I, you know, I'm not making excuses. I'm not saying nothing, but I'm saying a lot of people who are in her position would not react well. She acted the way she acted, which I'm going to get into details as to what she acted like.
And it was not good.
She had a lot of excuses, you know? It was like, who's that other guy that we said had a lot of excuses as well?
Ed.
Was it Andre?
Oh.
There was one that you're like, I feel weirdly bad for him.
Yeah.
Then it's like, they reach a certain age and you're like, I no longer feel bad for you because you're just an arsehole, but I do feel a little bit bad for you.
Or was it
also,
Panzeram?
Also, look at the tip of my finger. I nearly chopped the top off it today in work.
It was Panzeram. And how did you do that?
I mean, at least it was me and not the dog. You always have to have your hand between the dog. Like, and I just... Because it's like, so it's a case of, if I do cut something off, it will be just a part of me and not an animal.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Which is my goal. I'm like, if I'm going to cut something off, I hope it's part of me. So that's what happened. Anyways, so in 1961, Mary started kindergarten. So she was born in 1957. So at the age of about 4, started kindergarten. And her teacher said she was almost always naughty. She said she saw her at one stage actually putting her hands around the neck of another child. And when she was told not to do that, Mary asked, why? Can it kill him?
That's a really weird thing for a kid to
say. I, as a child, did not understand at the age of 4.
What killing someone was.
Nobody understood. Like, yeah, I feel like that means she saw death.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose she'd seen her child, like her friend. No. Yeah, she'd seen her friend getting rolled over. We don't know that her friend was the same age as her. Maybe she was a year older than her or something.
But you said the friend got rolled over when she was 5. She was put into preschool when she was 4.
But
so
the
this
5
is
was
before.
Friend. The friend was 5.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay, okay, okay.
Do you get me? Yeah. So maybe Mary was 4.
And she was 5.
Saw
yeah.
And then joined. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like to understand death like that is unusual in such a small child.
Yeah.
Who, like, you need to have experience in it. Because, like, kids don't get it. Especially when television wasn't really a thing. You know, like on telly, like nowadays you see a cartoon and like, I was watching The Simpsons and a fucking whale died. It washed up on the shore and Lisa was minding it and then the whale died because obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a conversation, like, opener. But like,
yeah,
age of 4 is very young to understand what killing means.
Yeah, to say like, well, like, would he die would be different from saying, would that kill him? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd say it's language that you use at home as well.
Yeah,
of like,
that's what I'm thinking.
Being like, I'll fucking kill you.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking she knows it from, is that the mother is constantly like, see this here, like grabbing a knife or something, you know, for example, be like, I will kill you with this. And then she's
also
like,
also even Mary
oh,
putting her hands around the neck of another child, that is,
that's learned behavior.
Very intense. Exactly. That's not something you just do.
No, no. I have never just choked someone out. Like, again, thrown back to Adam, like, he would do fucking choke slams and shit on me, but it was learned from wrestling. You know what I mean? He never would have done that if it wasn't for the fact that he was into wrestling.
No. She saw someone doing that to someone.
Yeah.
Whether it was another child doing it to a fucking animal, or if it was her mother doing it to her, or the men doing it to her mother. Whatever.
Oh, ew. Ew. Ew.
Ew, no, I didn't mean it sexually, girl. I did not mean it like that.
No, because I'm fair imagining now that the child was fully in the room while the clients were doing bits to the mother. And, like...
Oh, they absolutely were, because she was being abused.
And how many of them had a choking kink. So now I'm like, that's why she knows it. But no, we're just going... It's actually nicer to assume that the mother was choking her out like fucking Homer.
Mary absolutely at this age was just experimenting, being like, I don't understand what I'm seeing at home. And she wanted to reenact it in real life to see what the story was.
Yeah.
That's what that was. Like, if you see someone strangling someone at home, you're going to be confused about it. You're not going to understand it. And then the best way to do it, if you can't ask your mother about it,
is just try it out.
The best thing you can do is try it out on some fool that's wandering around the school.
Especially if she considers that a normal day-to-day interaction. She's just hanging out with the fucking friends as far as she's concerned.
So Mary obviously was like a bit odd, like, and kids read vibes, kids know that you're a bit weird, like, I'm sorry, like, but if you're that weird, you're gonna be kind of left out. So Mary was lonely and the other kids used to tease her. She would react violently to this and she would kick, hit, pinch, tell tall stories all the time. She was just very much looking for attention, in my opinion. Like, all of this is attention seeking.
Yeah.
Acting out in school, fighting with kids, acting out. It's just acting out. It's looking for attention. Telling tall stories, for me, is very much a sign of attention-seeking behaviour.
Yeah. She wants them to like her that for something. Like, so she's making up all these incredible stories.
At this stage, she doesn't care what how they're reacting, because once she's getting attention, at least she's getting attention.
Yeah, like, oh, well, no, that's also true. That's very fair.
Do you know?
Any attention,
like, she's getting
attention.
Negative attention at home. She never gets attention at home, and when it is, it's negative.
Yeah.
She's used to it.
So at least it's attention.
And, like, chances of her being told it's because I love you after her mother beats the shit out of her.
Oh, facts. Oh, 100%. I do this because I love you.
So then she's like, then you associate love with abuse, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. Like, the most disturbing stuff in regards to, like, what Mary suffered would be her frequent drug overdoses. A lot of them were most likely that she was fed pills by her mother. At one stage, when she was only a year old, she nearly overdosed after she took some pills that were hidden in a narrow nook inside a gramophone. But when police arrived, they said that it seemed impossible that the baby could reach the pills where they were, that it seemed like it was out of reach and in an awkward place. And it was strange that she would eat so many of the medicine that tasted like acid. It tasted bad, but sure luck.
Yeah, that's
when she was three, she and her brother were found eating little blue pills along with candy that their aunt Catherine had bought them. Betty said, oh, they must have taken the pill bottle out of my handbag. Which obviously isn't true. Like, that sounds to me like their mother was mixing pills in with the fucking sweets, knowing that they'd eat them by accident.
Yeah. They'd go unnoticed and she could fucking just get rid of the kids that way then.
Yeah, and it would be an accidental overdose. Kat, so the aunt and her husband, actually offered to adopt Mary, but Betty refused to let the child go and broke off contact with the family. So, yeah, she's just a bad bitch.
Yeah, honestly, fuck Betty.
In her most serious overdose, she swallowed a bunch of iron pills belonging to her mother. She lost consciousness and had her stomach pumped. Mary, along with a young playmate that Mary had told, both of these two kids, so Mary and her friend, both said that Betty had given Mary the Smarties candy that had made her sick. So Betty told the fucking doctors and shit. She was like, yeah, my mom gave me the Smarties that made me sick. And then she went to school and told a friend, like, who went and told the teacher that it was her mom. Anyways,
like, you can't just be out here lying when your kid is capable of, like, thought
and also, like, speech. Yeah. If the child was mute, I'd say
fair enough,
fucking easy as, like, as in, make sense. Like, sure, look, they're not going to be able to snitch. This child is able to talk.
Yeah, she's obviously going to snitch you up for being a shit parent, like.
And she probably didn't even know. Like, she was just like, oh, the you know, the food made me sick. Like, the same way, like, you'd say about, like, I ate bad chicken.
You wouldn't fucking think, but, like, oh yeah, my mother tried to kill me. I may go tell my schoolmate.
No, she was just like, shit crack, I got sick because my mum gave me Smarties that were a bit funny.
Yeah.
I mean, fucking obviously, overdoses aren't good for a growing child's brain.
Shock.
And can cause serious brain damage, obviously, which is a common trait among offenders. Mm-hmm. But, fucking obviously. I mean, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Being involved in drugs at such a young age, accidentally or on purpose, is not good.
No.
Same way with taking in any sort of chemical. It was the same way with that fella that drank the fucking gasoline or the kerosene or whatever the fuck it was.
Kerosene dreams. Kerosene. Fucking Pee Wee Gaskins. Yeah.
Like, it's not good for you.
It's not good for you.
Do you know? So, Betty was a drama queen, so the mother, and she loved to play the martyr. People kind of speculate that she may have suffered from Munchausen by proxy syndrome.
Mm.
And that she really thrived on the attention that she got when Mary was, like, dying and sick, you know, and these tragic fucking accidents, you know, that it was like she fed off it. This is kind of a possible explanation as to why, despite causing so much harm to Mary and actually actively kind of almost disliking the child, she always wanted her back. That she was a source of.
Okay, she was in the way, but she was feeding her with too much of what she needed with the, oh, have sympathy for me, I have a sick
child.
She
was in the way and she didn't like her, but also, it's a great way of getting my frustrations out because I can cause her so much harm. And also I get great attention and, like, oh my God, you're so hard done by. Your poor daughter is such a klutz. She fell out the window again. Jeez, she fair loves eating the shit that you're hiding around the house. Like,
yeah.
She's 1 year of age. Put it on a high counter.
Literally.
Get a medicine cabinet.
What are you doing hiding pills in a fucking gramophone anyway? Where are social services in all of this as well, is what I want to know.
I mean, they seem to be rocking up regularly, but they also seem to like be going home afterwards. Yeah. But I mean, they did the same thing to Sylvia Likens. So yeah,
exactly. Fucking, I guess. What better do we fucking expect?
Mary, as she grew up, was like resentful of like her mother's like complaints, like as in her mom pure victimized herself, and this bothered Mary more than the actual sexual abuse. And honestly, relatable.
Relatable, absolutely.
Stop victimizing yourself. You are not the victim in this situation. You hurt me. You talking about, like, oh, there was one incident where it's like a perfect example of Betty was like crying and telling her sister that Mary had been run over by a truck, which of course generated a heap of fucking attention and sympathy, and everyone was like, you know, coming over, being like, are you okay? Yeah, and Betty the next day just said, yeah, that's not true. Mary's with friends who had just had taken her in and temporarily adopted her. Like, attention seeking. It's very much the Munchausen by proxy. We obviously can't diagnose, but the vibe is there. It makes sense in the...
Quiva, all we've done for the last 2 years is diagnose. Yes, the fuck we can diagnose.
I know, but we're supposed to say we can't. This is obviously not... It's a speculation, but she... Yeah. She's ticking all the boxes.
She's, yeah, she has all the symptoms of it at the very least. If we can't
right,
say
let's
for sure.
Google Munchausen by proxy symptoms. Is there even frequent visits to hospitals?
Yeah.
Serious and complex medical conditions. Symptoms that obviously don't match test results.
Mm-hmm.
Symptoms that get worse for no clear reason. So yeah, makes sense that she's like creating problems that don't exist so she can get attention.
Yeah, definitely.
Probably the worst part of the whole story is, you know, if it's true, we can't obviously say for sure that it is true, but is Mary's, the way Betty used Mary in her sex work. Yeah, it was like one of the worst cases of child sexual abuse, like probably in a long time. Like it was just one of those, like, I mean, obviously she was being pimped out by her mother yeah. to these men. No other relatives, including Mary's younger brother, were aware of this abuse or could confirm that it had actually happened, but it's definitely something that would explain her behaviour.
Right. I mean, not to be bad, but like, I feel like, why would she make it up? You know what I mean? She already
also
has enough.
How would they know? Like, how would they know? The whole point of it is that it is a secret.
Yeah, she's not going to let it be known that she's letting any man do bits to her young child. Like, that's guaranteed to get her taken off her. The rest of the stuff she can lie away, but if anyone else knows about it, like, she's done. So she would hide that, obviously.
Mary was raised in... it was in my notes, it says the depressed area of Scotswood. So, I mean, it's obviously just like a fucking, it was obviously a bad area at the time.
Poor.
And she had a reputation for theft, vandalism, and attacking other children. In school, as she grew up, she became known as a chronic liar, an attention seeking, disruptive pupil, and on occasion, she voiced her desire to hurt people. She ended up becoming friends with a girl named Norma Bell, who was 2 years older than her, but was no relation.
Right.
She wasn't related. Well, we can't actually say for sure since she didn't know who her dad was, but they don't think she was related.
But still, with a name like Bell, does Bell not come from the husband or does it come from the
yeah,
mother?
Yeah, but we don't know who the dad was.
Oh, right. Okay, no, I get you now. So we can't say for absolute certain that they weren't related. Okay, never mind. Yeah. I get you now.
I mean, they probably aren't. They're saying she definitely wasn't, but I'm just saying, I'm just trying to be a bit fucking pedantic because we can't say for sure.
That's true.
They began spending a lot of time together. They were next door neighbours and they had this like, they had a fence that split their yards and they would like speak through the fence. I don't know if there was like, it's one of those like picket fences that there's space in between the slats or was there like special little holes or whatever the fuck, but that's how they used to communicate. Oh God, we're jumping straight into the details. Okay. So on May 11th, 1968, they were playing with a 3-year-old boy. So 1968. So Mary would have been 57. So she would have been 11.
Okay.
They were playing with... Mary would have been 11 and Norma would have been 13, we'll say, give or take. Because obviously I don't know their birth dates and stuff. Mm-hmm. But they were playing with a 3-year-old boy on top of a Newcastle air raid shelter. The boy fell and was severely injured, but the incident was written off as accidental. Because, of course.
Yeah.
On May 12th, so the following day, the mothers of 3 young girls informed the police that Mary had attacked and tried to choke their children. One of the girls said that Mary had put her hands around my neck and squeezed hard. She took her hands off my neck and then she did the same to Susan. Norma said about this that Mary went to the other girl and asked, what happens if you choke someone? Do they die? Then Mary wrapped her hands around the girl's throat and squeezed. The girl started to go purple. Norma said that she ran off and left Mary behind with the girls. And she said, I'm not friends with her now. We'll come back to Norma.
Mm.
Mary was interviewed and lectured by authorities, but no juvenile charges were filed. They just probably wrote it off, as, yeah, just girls fucking messing.
Yeah. Kids messing. Being kids.
Young girls fighting. Easy to write it off. It was written off. On the 25th of May, so this is all happening in the 1 month, like, the day before Mary's 11th birthday. So Mary's birthday was the 26th of May, we've now found out.
Okay.
So she was 10 for those first couple of ones. Mary strangled 4-year-old Martin Brown in a derelict house. Martin was last seen at approximately 3:15 p.m. and was discovered at 3:30, lying on the floor of a boarded up house. Three boys were foraging for some scrap wood and found the child on his back next to a window with blood and saliva trickling down the side of his cheek and chin. Panicked, they called out to the construction workers outside, who remembered giving little Martin some biscuits earlier that day. They raced up the stairs and tried to revive him, but he was already dead.
So sad that they gave him biscuits.
I know. One of the boys noticed Mary Bell and a friend coming towards the house, and they stopped to talk directly beneath the window. So the two girls, I don't know, did they not realise that... they must not have realised that there was people in the house.
Mm.
The lads heard her, Mary, asking Norma, like, will we go up and have a look, basically. And they squeezed through the boards to get inside, and Mary had basically brought Norma on a fucking safari trip to see, you know, do you want to have a look at the young lad that I killed?
Fucking Stand By Me vibes, but serial killer edition.
So they rocked up upstairs, but were told to go away. So the girls went off on the hunt, and they decided to go and find Martin's aunt to tell her that there had been an accident, that they thought it was Martin, and that there was blood all over. And Mary said, I'll show you where it is. They led the aunt to the house, basically. And, like, fucking trauma dumped on this poor woman in the middle of fucking, out of the fucking blue. Like, obviously, this was obviously just to see, she obviously wanted to see people's reactions. I feel like she didn't have emotions or something.
Yeah.
So the idea of someone having strong emotions was probably fascinating to her. So she wanted to see that side of things.
She wanted to see how people reacted when they were sad, because she doesn't get sad.
I think so.
That sounds about right. That does sound right. Like,
do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, it seems like it fascinated her almost.
Yeah, because she's definitely too far gone to be, like, getting sad and stuff. Like, sadness shouldn't be an emotion for her, given her background. So that would definitely add up. Like, I'm no fucking psychologist. I can't say for sure she never felt sadness, but, like...
I mean, that's just me. I've made that up on the spot. Like, I don't know, but it just gives that vibe to me.
Yeah. No, because it would make sense, because she's experienced too much to be able to process the emotion of sadness. Anger and all of that, sure, but sadness, no, because she should be feeling it for all of the shit that's happened to her, and she isn't. So I think she's gone beyond it. Again, so, unprofessional fucking diagnoses here, but, like, it sounds right.
Yeah, it does.
Someone tell me I'm wrong.
You can't. The police, when they rocked up to have, like, investigate or whatever, they couldn't find any evidence of violence. So there was no signs of violence. There was a bottle of aspirin nearby, and they kind of speculated maybe he'd eaten them. There were no visible strangulation marks or any other marks on the child. And so the authorities just believed he died accidentally, and the criminal investigation department was not called in. The official report on Martin Brown declared his cause of death open, but the community, the Scotswood community, just couldn't just let it go.
Mm.
They marched and protested about the dangerous conditions of the condemned buildings in the neighbourhood. So they were basically making the point of someone left, you know, pills or whatever the fuck lying around.
Accessible. Kids shouldn't have access
to these scary buildings. They're dangerous. Even if this child hadn't died, like, it's still a dangerous thing that they have access to these houses. Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. Meantime, Mary and Norma were giving Martin's aunt the absolute fucking creeps. Because they were going, asking all these really, like, invasive, prying questions. She said, they kept asking me, do you miss Martin? And do you cry for him? And they asked about his mother, saying, does June miss him? And they were always smiling. She said, they were always grinning, was the word she used.
Ew.
In the end, I could stand it no more and told them to get out and not to come back. Martin's mother, June, was also bothered by the girls. After hearing a knock at the door, she opened the front door to find Mary standing there. She said Mary smiled and asked to see Martin. I said, no, pet, Martin is dead. She turned round and said, oh, I know he's dead. I wanted to see him in his coffin. And she was grinning. I was just speechless that such a young child should want to see a dead baby. And I just slammed the door on her.
Like, it's bad enough you killed the kid, but now you're going to fucking go to his ma's house and smile in her face and be like, can I see your dead child?
I think she was fascinated by the concept of death and everything involving it.
It's a, again, like, the fact that you were saying, like, do you miss him? Do you cry for him?
Yeah, it's, I feel like I'm right in the fact that she, it mightn't be the fact that she can't feel the emotions herself, but I feel like she's morbidly nearly curious about, you know,
how other people respond to these things. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Like, there is a level of curiosity in regards to emotions and stuff when you're a kid. And, like, I remember feeling like that, being like, you know, why is that person crying? Or, you know, why are they Yeah, I feel like sadness is an emotion that you do kind of question when you're a kid.
Yeah.
More so than happy or angry. Because happy is obvious and angry is obvious.
Yeah.
Sadness is more nuanced.
And you'll experience them a lot more frequently in your childhood. But like happiness is your, supposed to be at least, your main emotion growing up.
Kids are happy like playing and stuff.
Yeah.
And angry is the kid is picking on you. Sad is more nuanced. And especially when it's about death.
Yeah. It's like grief in particular, if we say it that way. Grief rather than sadness. But like, yeah, definitely. It's weird. It's fucking weird. I would fair be fucking trying that child as a witch if she showed up at my door asking these questions. Sorry, I'd be like, burn her.
I'd be throwing rocks at that little child.
Yeah.
And give fuck. Get the fuck off my lawn before I set my dog on you.
Literally.
I'll actually batter you.
Little fucking.
Get the fuck off my lawn.
Hobgoblin.
I'll actually make fertilizer. Get off my lawn. And she's fucking 11. Like, she's old enough to know better. Do you know, like, you might lack a little bit of empathy at that age, because I know I did. Not in, like, a weird way, but in, like, a... You do lack empathy because you're not as experienced and all this kind of stuff.
You don't know the appropriate response to certain situations.
No, and I can understand curiosity in regards to, like, if someone was going to go to a funeral, you'd nearly be like, you kind of... You know, it is... I understand the curiosity in regards to, like, a dead body and stuff, but she's creepy.
She is creepy.
And her... Like, ominous behaviour wasn't limited to Martin's grieving family. On Sunday, the day following Martin's death, she celebrated her birthday. And she celebrated by trying to throttle Norma's 11-year-old sister. Fortunately, Norma's father saw Mary's stranglehold on the girl and he said, I chopped Mary's hands away and gave her a clip on the shoulder.
Good enough. That's that situation dealt with.
Do you know what? It makes me think real fucking badly of Norma. That's your younger sister and you're letting your little bitch of a friend fucking put
who's younger than you
her.
As well. Like, you were older and presumably taller than her. Like, do something.
This, like, Norma was 13.
Yeah.
12, 13, 14, depending on where her birthday lay.
Yeah. She's like heading into proper, not adulthood, but like, you know, proper, being a proper person. Like, you start becoming a real person at that point. You stop being a child, you start being a person.
Yeah.
Around that age. Especially back then where you're supposed to grow up faster. Like, we're definitely growing up slower now than we did 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, your childhood is more protected now.
Yeah, so that's fucking... No. See, Norma's fucking... Why was Norma... Mary has a... Have we any background on Norma? Because Mary has an excuse, at least, for the way she is. Why is Norma a sick little bitch who's taking joy in these people's fucking miseries when there's nothing wrong with her?
I'm pretty sure... I haven't read through these notes since I did them the last two times, but I'm pretty sure Norma's... situation is kind of mentioned. Might not be her background.
I truly can't remember.
But
this is the fun
she
fact.
Might have been a little bit of a simpleton.
Of yeah, I okay, I but simple she... doesn't make you go around grinning into people's faces at the fucking sight of death. Like
no, but it makes you like she might have been easier to lead.
Oh, because yeah, okay, fair enough.
Easily influenced, especially if Mary is a very strong personality. Like when someone is so domineering and you're easily led, naive, whatever the fuck, or even like. What's the proper terminology? Is mentally challenged okay to say?
Yeah.
Probably not, is it?
Yeah, or like having a mental disability, a learning disability, depending on what we're
looking
at.
Yeah. Like as in, and if Mary was very domineering, like, you know.
Right, so Norma just wasn't really able to think for herself then.
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure it's mentioned. I should have read through my notes before I started doing this. But
listen,
anyway.
The fact that we're doing it at all is a miracle. Fuck going through the notes.
So on Monday morning, so... What, 2 days after Martin died? Yeah, so Martin died on the Saturday, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and then she had her birthday then on the Sunday. Yeah, and then on the Monday, school went back. So teachers at the Day Nursery on Woodlands Crescent at the end of White House Road, for anyone who's local, arrived to find the school ransacked. School supplies were strewn around and cleaning materials had been splattered on the floor. But the most disturbing discovery was the four scribbled notes that was left behind. First of all was, I murder so that I may come back. The word that is in all caps.
Okay.
There's a slur here, but they're kind of using it as a name. So I feel like they didn't mean it the way that it's meant now. So I'm going to say it just for fucking clarity, right?
Yeah, we can't go against what the facts are.
So it says, fush of... So obviously meant to be F-U-C-H, obviously meant to be fuck off, but it says fuch of. We watch out, Fanny and Faggot. I feel like that was their names, as in like, I feel like Mary was Fanny and Norma was the other one. Yeah. So they, in another one, they said, we did murder Martin Brown. Martin was spelled wrong. Fuck off, you bastard. And the fourth and last one, was, "You are micey because we murdered Martin. Go brown, you bit. Look out there, murder's about by Fanny and Old Faggot, you screws." When I tell you it was all spelt wrong, as in, because was spelt wrong, Martin was spelt wrong again. You bet, B-E-T-E. I don't know what that means. Yeah, and screws was also spelt wrong.
Okay.
So obviously the police rocked up at the school to be like, what the fuck? And they took the notes away and filed them away as just like a sick joke. Mary would later admit that she and Norma had written the notes for a giggle.
Was
the term she used. The school installed an alarm system after this because this wasn't the first break-in at the nursery. That same morning, so the Monday morning, the day after she tried to strangle Norma's younger sister and 2 days after she actually killed a small child, she drew a picture in her notebook of a child in the same pose as that in which Martin Brown had been found, with a bottle near him with the word tablet on it. And there was a man walking towards the child.
Uh-huh.
Do with that information what you will. I don't know what the fuck it means. I mean, she's just said that she's done it, like, because they're not going to have released, like, the way the child was lying. Like, the fact that she knew that there was a bottle near him with the word tablet. Like, you know what I mean?
All yeah, she knew there was a bottle of pills next to him and stuff. When she was told to fuck off when she went up the stairs. So she couldn't have gotten close enough to the body to have seen anything for that to have been when she saw it.
But even if she did, the tablet thing, everything else, I'm like, no, it's just too sus.
Yeah, definitely. And then trying to, like, so, draw on a man walking to, oh yeah, you saw a man kill him, is it? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
Yeah, in her notebook by the picture, there was like a little thing written and it said, "On Saturday I was in the house and my mam sent me to ask Norma if she would come up the top with me. We went up and we came down at Margaret's Road and there was a crowd of people beside an old house. I asked what was the matter. There had been a boy who just laid down and died." Mary's notebook entry did not strike the teacher as odd, although she was the only student who wrote about Martin's death.
How, like,
so that Friday, yeah, that Friday, the following Friday, or not the following Friday, yeah, that Friday of the same week, the newly installed alarm went off at the nursery and Mary and Norma were caught red-handed, but denied breaking in the time before, and they were released to the custody of their parents, but a date was set for them to appear at juvenile court. A week later, Mary attacked Norma near the nursery sandpit. A boy said he saw Mary scratch her friend and kick her in the eye.
Kick her in the eye? Ow!
Yeah, I know. But he thought it was funny when he heard Mary scream, "I am murderer." He said she pointed in the direction of the house where Martin Brown was found and said, "That house over there, that's where I killed." And she kind of trailed off. Mm. But he said, and all the kids obviously there, said that since Mary was well known as a show-off and someone who made up a lot of shit and just talked shit a lot,
no one believed
it. They just presumed she was looking for attention yet again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was May. So we've gone past June. And towards the end of July, Mary visited the Howe Ho household. I don't know who the fuck they are. And I feel like I looked... Oh, never mind. I've read ahead. I know now who they are. So they went to the household, the Brown... It was the Howe household. H-O-W-E. Ho? How?
H-O-W-E. How? Yeah.
And said, "I know something about Norma that'll get her put away straight away." She said, "Norma put her hands on a boy's throat. It was Martin Brown. She pressed and he just dropped." To make her point, she grabbed her own throat in a choking gesture and then left. This was only days before the disappearance of a 3-year-old Brian Howe.
Jesus fuck Christ.
When Brian went missing, Mary ran into his sister Pat. And she asked him, "Are you looking for Brian?" Because Pat was visibly worried and she was looking for the missing toddler who should have already been home. So he was a small 3-year-old boy with fair hair and he usually played close to home. He didn't tend to stray. You know, like some kids are more inclined to like wander, we'll say.
Yeah.
He was one of those kids that was like very much a, "I'm going to wander around here close to home." But he'd kind of vanished. Mary and Norma both offered to help search for him. They led Pat through the neighborhood looking in all these different places. How about we'll check here? How about we'll check there? Meantime, they knew exactly where he was. They crossed the railroad tracks to the industrial area where the kids of Scotswood often played among construction materials, old cars and dangerous wreckage. And Pat was really worried about, you know, this area because only a few weeks ago, Martin Brown had been found dead inside of a condemned house. And she was like, "This is a dangerous area. It's kind of reminded me of the whole Martin thing."
Yeah. And you know, other kid who like fell and got really badly hurt.
Yeah, was written off as an accident. But yeah. Also, yeah, how old was he actually?
I think also 3. I'm pretty sure you said
he was, wasn't he? 1 second. Yeah, 3-year-old. Yeah, so they had, you know, found that, like, yeah, they went to the industrial area and Mary pointed to these large concrete blocks, you know, the ones that they always have in these construction places. And she said he might be playing behind the blocks or between them. Norma said, no, he never goes there. But in fact, Brian's body did lay in between the blocks where Mary had pointed. And Mary wanted Pat to discover her dead brother in front of him, in front of her, basically. So it definitely is the weird fucking, I don't even know what you'd call it.
It's like,
it's like voyeuristic in a creepy way.
It's serial killers who pose their victims so that they hurt as many people as possible by their discovery.
It's returning to the scene of the crime.
Yeah, just that to as have well. Look. Definitely. Like it's wanting to cause pain, not to the victim, but to the survivors.
Exactly. Norma said later that she wanted, as in she being Mary, wanted Pat Howe to have a shock, but Pat decided to go home. And it was 11:10 that night when the police had found him, his body, and discovered that he had been a victim of manual strangulation. Oh, God. Nearby, a pair of broken scissors lay in the grass. There were puncture marks on his thighs, and his genitals had been partially skinned, and clumps of his hair had been cut away. Inspector James Dobson said the wounds were bizarre, that there was, and I quote, a terrible playfulness about it, a terrible gentleness, if you like, and somehow the playfulness of it made it more rather than less terrifying. Brian's belly had been signed M with a blade. This cut wasn't noticed until days later. It looked like someone had written an N, a capital N, and then a fourth mark had been added by a different hand to change the N into an M.
Aha, okay. Interesting. So N's and M's.
I'm assuming when you say that, that like the N was the one swipe zigzag.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was made into an M with one line coming down.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's a real fucky M actually. I've just had to draw that. And it's... Yeah, no, I can see it. I can see it.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So you'd know like that the other one was there longer than the fourth line kind of thing.
Yeah, you're kind of like... It looks like it's not part of the original squiggle, we'll say.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in the summer of 1968, Scotswood was like a very like economically depressed little community. It was like about 300 miles north of London, and it was just, I suppose, filled with people now who were just full of panic. They were just like, there's someone in this community that's killing it and like targeting children.
Yeah.
Police flooded the community, which obviously being such a small, not very well off area, like the people weren't able to like support them as well as they could have been. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, everyone between the age of 3 and 15 was being interviewed. Adults were wondering if Martin Brown's accident was murder. So they were kind of going back to the young lad. And Martin's aunt said herself, we were real nervous, but the kids themselves felt it too. The reason they were interviewing young people was because a medical examiner suggested that the killer might have been a child, since relatively little force was used. Among the children who stood out as suspicious to investigators were 11-year-old Mary and 13-year-old Norma. Mary was evasive and acted strange, where Norma was excited by the murder. One investigator said she was continually smiling as if it was a huge joke.
All right, Norma. That's either doesn't understand the seriousness of the situation or doesn't give a shit. And I don't know which one it is.
I think it's the second one.
Doesn't give a shit. That sounds right.
I think she plays up into the, like, I didn't know what was going on thing.
Afterwards, yeah.
Which she did.
Yeah. Honestly, not gonna lie, so far it sounds like Norma's the big old ringleader of this all, like.
Doesn't it?
It really does.
That she did the N first and then M Mary added on the fourth stripe.
Or even that, like, the N
or
was
even
there
Norma
first,
added it on to make it look like it was Mary.
Exactly. Realised, like, oh no, I shouldn't sign it N because I'm gonna have to pin all of this on Mary afterwards, so. Would they not have done a pair of Fs as well? Sorry, if they have fucking nicknames. Would they not have just done, like, FF in a way of not getting themselves
would've
caught?
Just as well.
I don't know. Anyways. What do
as
I know?
As the investigation like narrowed in on the two girls, specifically on Mary, she just spontaneously fucking remembered thing. And she said, she told investigators that she'd seen an 8-year-old boy with Brian on the day he died. The boy hit Brian for no reason, she said. She had also seen the same boy playing with broken scissors. That boy that she was accusing, she obviously named a specific child,
mm-hmm.
had been at the airport in the afternoon that Brian had died.
Pick a better fucking scapegoat, like. At least know where your scapegoat's going to be if you're going to be
lying. Would have worked out well if that child didn't have an alibi.
Yeah.
Because the scissors were confidential information. Nobody knew about the scissors.
Oh,
so
shit.
When she said that, if that child actually had been around,
he was going down for that murder.
It would very hard for him to prove that it wasn't him.
Yeah.
Since he actually had a solid fucking foolproof alibi, this implicated her.
Silly bitch.
She described the scissors exactly. She said they were silver coloured. There was something wrong with them, like one leg was either broken or bent. And it was becoming very clear to investigators that even either Norma, Mary or both had seen Brian die. And one or both of them was probably the killer.
I mean,
I mean, Brian was buried on the 7th of August and Detective Dobson was there, and he said Mary Bell was standing in front of the house when the coffin was brought out. I was, of course, watching her. He had the sus on her. He said she's suspicious. He said, it was when I saw her there that I knew I did not dare risk another day. She stood there laughing and rubbing her hands. I thought, my God, I've got to bring her in. She'll do another one.
Like a fucking cartoon villain.
Like fucking Monty Burns.
Literally. Fucking Mojo Jojo herself standing there.
Creepy as fuck.
Oh.
So Dobson questioned Norma again. And Norma now claimed that Mary had told her she'd kill Brian and brought her to see his body at the blocks. Mary told Norma, I squeezed his neck and pushed up his lungs. That's how you kill them. Keep your nose dry and don't tell anybody. When she saw Brian, Norma knew he was dead. She said his lips were purple. Mary ran her fingers along his lips and she said that she had enjoyed it. That night, Norma was taken to the police station to give an official statement. This story obviously shocked the police and they were like, we need to fucking talk to Mary.
Mm.
And they wasted no time in picking her up at 12:15 that night. So 15 minutes past midnight, Mary Bell was picked up by police. Dobson said, despite her being so tired, she kept her wits about her. He said she appeared to see herself in sort of a cliche scenario of cops and robbers. Nothing surprised her and she admitted to nothing.
That's way too calculated for her age, but okay. Like, that's scary. That's proper serial killer shit. Like, that's canon. That they're like, they innately know how to protect themselves. That it's a weird thing with serial killer psychology or just criminal psychology in general.
Yeah. So part of the interview, Dobson saying, I have reason to believe that you were near the blocks with Norma. A man shouted at some children who were nearby and you both ran away from where Brian was lying in the grass. This man will probably know you. Mary said he would have to have good eyesight. The investigator said, why would he need to have good eyesight? And she said, because he was clever to see me when I wasn't there. I'm going home. This is being brainwashed, she said, and she stood up. Dobson was going to let her leave, and at one point Mary actually asked, is this place bugged?
In the end,
she refused to budge on her statement, and she said, I'm making no statements. I've made lots of statements. It's always me you come for. Norma's a liar. She always tries to get me in trouble. Mary was permitted to leave at 3:30 in the morning, because she basically twisted the story so much that Dobson actually started second-guessing himself. When he saw her behaviour at the funeral and he gathered additional testimony from Norma, he brought Mary back into the station. He said she was very apprehensive. She gave me the impression that she knew the time of reckoning had come. She now admitted to being present when Brian died, but her confession took a bizarre turn. Brian was in front of his street and me and Norma were walking along towards him, she said. We walked past him and Norma says, are you coming to the shop, Brian? And I says, Norma, you've got no money. How can you go to the shop? Where are you getting it from? She says, Nebby, which was kind of like a slang term for keep your nose clean, as in butt the fuck out, basically.
Mind right, your fucking business. Mind your business. Yeah.
She said, little Brian followed and Norma says, walk up in front. I wanted Brian to go home, but Norma kept coughing so Brian wouldn't hear us. We went down Cross Hill Road with Brian still in front of us. There was this coloured boy and Norma tried to start a fight with him. Oh my God. She says, Norma said, Darky, whitewash, it's time you got washed. His big brother came out and hit her. She shouted, Hoey, put your jukes up. The lad walked away and looked at her as if she was daft. Oh my God, I forgot that part. But anyways, just casual racism as part of her fucking day.
I mean,
I don't know, I'm surprised.
Yeah.
We went beside Dixon's shop and climbed over the railings. I mean, through a hole and over the railing. Then I said, Norma, where are you going? And Norma said, do you know that little pool where the tadpoles are? When we got there was a big long tank with a big round hole with little holes around it. Norma says to Brian, are you coming in here? Because it's the lady coming on the number 82 and she's got boxes of sweets and that. We all got inside and then Brian started to cry. Norma asked him if he had a sore throat. She started to squeeze his throat and he started to cry. She said, this isn't where the lady comes. It's over there by them big blocks. We went over to the blocks and she said, ah, you'll have to lie down. And he lay down beside the blocks where he was found. Norma says, put your neck up, and he did. Then she got a hold of his neck and said, put it down. She started to feel up and down his neck. She squeezed it hard. You could tell it was hard because her fingertips were going white. Brian was struggling and I was pulling her shoulders, but she went mad. I was pulling her chin up, but she screamed at me. By this time, she had banged Brian's head on some wood or corner of wood, and Brian was lying senseless. His face was all white and blue and his eyes were open. His lips were purplish and he had all like slaver on. It turned into something like fluff. Norma covered him up and I said, Norma, I've got nothing to do with this. I should tell on you, but I'll not. Little Lassie was there, presuming a dog, and it was crying. And she said, don't you start or I'll do the same to you. It still cried and she went to get hold of its throat, but it growled at her. She said, now, don't be hasty. This is a long statement. I'm not going to read all of it because it's like long. But Norma was acting kind of funny and making twitchy faces and spreading her fingers out. She said, this is the first, but it'll not be the last. I was frightened then. We went up Crosswood Roadway and Norma went into the house and she got a pair of scissors and she put them down her pants. She said, go and get a pen. I said, no, what for? She said, to write a note on his stomach. I wouldn't get the pen. She had a Gillette razor blade. It had Gillette on it. We went back to the blocks and Norma cut his hair. She tried to cut his leg and his ear with the blade. She tried to show me it was sharp. She took the top of her dress where it was raggy and cut it. It made a slip. I'm not reading all of this. It's just like fluff. You know what I mean? When we got along a bit, she says, man, you shouldn't have done because you'll get into trouble. And I hadn't done nothing. I haven't got the guts. I couldn't kill a bird by the neck or throw or anything. It's horrible that. We went up the steps and went home. I was nearly crying. I said, if Pat finds out, she'll kill you. Never mind killing Brian, because Pat's more like a tomboy. She's always climbing at old buildings and that. I was helping look for Brian and I was trying to let Pat in on. I was trying to let on to Pat that I knew where he was in the blocks, but Norma said he'll not be over there. He never goes there. And she convinced Pat he wasn't there. I got shouted in about 7:30 and I stayed in. I got woke up about 11:30 and we stood at the door as Brian had been found. The other day, Norma wanted to get put in a home. She said, will you run away with me? And I said, no. She says, if you get put in a home and you feed the little ones and murder them, then run away again. So that was Mary's statement, or most of it.
Right.
And I kind of believe her.
Yeah, like it's very convincing.
Even the whole thing about Pat being like, I tried to tell her where he was.
Yeah, and Norma wouldn't let me.
But then I'm like, I see the whole thing of like, was...
Norma was trying to spare her.
Yeah.
It could go either way. That is a tough one.
And Mary was like being morbidly curious and wanted to see Pat's reaction.
Yeah.
Or is it a case of Mary was like, no, and then Norma was like, no, I don't want her to find him in front of us because we'll look suspicious.
Yeah, but it, at the same time, weirdly does... Like, that makes a lot more sense with an N being turned into an M. That yeah. Norma did that murder. Like, I don't believe that Mary was frightened.
No, I feel like there was a pair of them in it and they're just turning on each other.
Yeah.
Is my opinion.
Exactly. Because I Norma feel like this would be a different story.
And Norma, yeah, Norma being that little bit older, she's much better at like verbalising stuff. So she's able to make herself look more innocent.
Yeah, definitely. And as well, because Mary's already a dark little bitch, like it's easy to say, sure, it was Mary, it wasn't me.
And she was raised badly and stuff versus Norma, who was raised normally.
Yeah, so she Mary could like she charged... could do all of that and just pin it on Mary easily.
Exactly. Mary was charged formally with the murder of Brian Howe, and she said that's all right with me. He then arrested Norma, who, in anger, like that she was mad that she was charged, said, "I never did that. I'll pay you back for this." The first night in their small jail cells in the Newcastle West End police station, the girls were restless. They kept shouting to each other through the door, said one policewoman who watched the children. The police station was not accustomed to housing child offenders and they had to make provisions as best they could. We finally told them to shut up. At one moment, I heard Mary shout out angrily about her mother. Mary had been a chronic bedwetter and was terrified of going to sleep. Another fucking tick in the
childhood trauma fucking thing, yeah.
What was it? And fires was the third one, wasn't it? Or small animals.
Head injury, bedwetting, animal torture. That's the holy trifecta of serial killers.
I feel like instead of animals, she started out with kids.
Yeah, she just went straight there. There could have been some animal torture that just nobody cared about, like estate cats and stuff that no one noticed. Mm-hmm. So we can't rule that out entirely without knowing. But she could have just jumped straight to straight murder, like because she didn't need that little bit in between that the others needed to be like, oh, murder's okay. You know, she was already there.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, so Mary was terrified of going to sleep for fear that she might like dirty her bed, basically. She said, I usually do. She confided in the police, like the policewoman. At home, Mary's mother would severely humiliate her whenever she wet the bed and would rub her daughter's face in...
Oh my God.
...in it, Mary said years later. And then would hang the mattress outside for the entire neighbourhood to see. Obviously to dry, but like she was obviously shaming Mary.
Yeah.
Like now everyone knows you pissed the bed. Like, I'm asleep. I can't obviously fucking help it.
Yeah.
Who wants to piss the bed on purpose?
Zero people. It's a horrible experience.
Also, preventative measures. Like, put a plastic tarp down under the sheets.
Get her fucking pull-ups. Something like...
Do you know? Lay down a fucking couple of towels. Do a job like your man. What's his name? Robert fucking... whatever the shite.
Remix.
During the course of her incarceration, the female guards got to know Mary better. So obviously, you can imagine with the kind of sexism at the time that the women were kind of in charge of minding the children, basically. Yeah. Probably would be the same now.
I think so.
Because I feel like kids find women less intimidating anyways, especially female children.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's still a case of, like, you know, you'll get a vanguard if you're a woman instead of a fucking normal
guard. Yeah, it makes sense. And especially with kids, like, if they're going to try and get information out of a child, a woman is going to have better luck than a man.
Yeah. They want that kind of maternal instinct.
Especially a child like Mary, who has like serious issues with men.
Yeah.
Do you know? She's not going to trust anyone. Yeah, so they got to know her better and they began describing her as confident, intelligent and cheeky. Some of her comments that she like would just blurt out real casual would shock the policeman, but others saw her just being as like a scared little girl who just had no real idea how bad her actions actually were. She didn't seem to understand how serious her crimes were.
Mm.
And they said that in the middle of the night, Mary would bolt upright.
Jesus Christ, man.
Her aggression and like hostility to just everything was almost like, she was almost naive about it. At one stage, she grabbed a stray cat by the neck. So
here's the small animals.
A guard told her not to hurt the cat. And she said, apparently, oh, she doesn't feel that anyway. And I like hurting little things that can't fight back. So hashtag confirmed.
Yeah. She definitely already did that, like, definitely.
In another incident, a policewoman said that Mary said she'd like to be a nurse because then I can stick needles into people. I like hurting people. If her parents were somehow responsible for Mary's behaviour, she wouldn't talk about it. She wouldn't fill in anything, you know, fill them in on anything. And because of their shady, like, jobs, the authorities knew very little about her family because they ran under the radar as much as they could.
Mm-hmm.
One detective who visited her home house described it as having no feeling of a home, just a shell. It was very peculiar. The only life you felt was that of a big dog barking. Dr. Orton was one of the first to see her during her incarceration and he said, I've seen a lot of psychopathic children, but I've never met one like Mary. As intelligent, as manipulative or as dangerous. During the murder trial, Mary's behaviour would do little to harvest sympathy. The trial lasted for 9 days and the media attention, though like mild compared to like nowadays kind of standards.
Yeah.
Was generating increasing interest as the trial progressed. Not by the final days, the press was everywhere. Despite attempts to make the court proceedings as threatening to the children, both Norma and Mary were bewildered by the attention. Mary appeared to be attentive, but admitted later that the whole thing was a blur. Prosecutor Rudolph Lyons opened the trial by suggesting that whoever murdered Brian Howe also killed Martin Brown. He methodically recounted the suspicious behaviour of both girls at the scene of Martin's death, how they plagued the mourning family with their morbid questions, and how they vandalised the nursery the next day, leaving notes that amounted to a confession. Because they did.
Yeah.
For Norma, these notes were the most damaging to her innocence. Handwriting analysis had verified that Norma had written the I murder so I may come back note.
Huh.
So she had written at least one of the four.
Right. But they couldn't match the handwriting on the other three to Mary.
I'm presuming they did match the other three to Mary, but this one was matched to Norma. And she was saying that she was innocent, that it was all Mary. But she, I mean, Norma wrote down that I murder so I may come back. You've admitted to murdering.
Yeah. That's fair. Like, again, that's not a statement I ever made at fucking 13 and I was a wee little emo kid.
Yeah, exactly. Forensic evidence also implicated Mary. Grey fibres from one of her wool dresses were discovered on the bodies of both victims. Fibres from Norma's maroon skirt were found on Brian's shoes. Although there were doubts about Norma's guilt, Mary was considered guilty by most. Mary's family present at the trial didn't help her case. Her mother, Betty, disrupted the proceeding with all her wailing and sobbing. Her long blonde wig kept slipping off her head. And she stormed out during the trial only to dramatically reappear moments later. Her father Billy sat quietly just ignoring his wife. Mary was described as being very pretty and intelligent, with dark hair and sharp blue eyes which, in anger, looked emotionally blank, they said. Observers in the courtroom watched her with a horrified kind of curiosity. And for such a manipulative, cunning little girl, Mary knew nothing about attracting sympathy. At one point, Mary told a police officer how a woman up in the gallery smiles at me. I don't smile back because it isn't a smiling matter. The jury wouldn't like it if I smiled, would they? I feel like Mary made a valid fucking point.
Yeah. If she's there smiling at any point during this, she's just going to get more condemned. Like, why? Why are they expecting more from this child who was up for fucking murder?
If I was up for murder, whether or not I'd committed it, I wouldn't be smiling fucking happy days. They were giving out earlier that she was smiling too much.
Yeah.
Because it was creepy.
No, she's not smiling enough in the courtroom.
Norm, on the other hand, was surrounded by a much more sympathetic family. So basically a family... It annoys me because like I know it would affect my opinion as well.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're looking at the background the kid comes from and you're like, oh, well, it would make sense that she's the little murderer. But it's not the kid's
fault, you know? Like, it's not Mary's fault that she has a shitty mother that causes fucking havoc. It doesn't say anything positive about Norma that she doesn't have a crazy mother.
Yeah, but I guess we didn't look at those kind of things back then.
No. Norma was the third of 11 children and reacted to evidence and testimony with a more childlike combination of fear and nervous tears. Mary saw crying as a sign of weakness and thought it was distasteful. I agree with Mary.
I agree with Mary too. I'm kind
Nora
of...
Nora was the first... Go on.
I'm relating to Mary's whole fucking attitude about this way too much. Yeah, like, aside from the fact that she definitely murdered, I'm like, leave Mary alone. Like, leave her alone.
I feel like it's not fair to analyse people's emotional states in stressful situations because you don't know how anyone is going to react. People react differently.
When they're already emotionally stunted, like...
Yeah.
Like, that's not fair. It's just not fair.
No. So... Nora was the first to take the stand, and her defence lawyer asked about the day Martin was murdered. How Mary poked her head through the fence and said there's been an accident, and took her to the abandoned house where Martin's body had just been discovered. Norma said, excitedly, Mary wanted to tell Rita that there had been an accident and something about blood all over something. Fucking no. I feel like Norma's talking shit. But anyways. Yeah. On the sixth day, Mary was called to the stand. Mary was composed and brimming with rationale. She had excuses and reasons for everything. Why did Mary ask to see Martin in his coffin? We were daring each other and one of us did not want to be a chicken. On drawing in her school notebook, like the drawing she did of Martin's body with the little pill bottle and everything, she said it was rumours. People were just saying there was a bottle of tablets and things spilled out of them. It was just to make it look better and that. Valid. I mean,
if other people knew about it, like, I can see how it could spread.
Yeah. She told the house that Norma had killed Martin because I had an argument with Norma that day and I couldn't think of nothing else to say. Mary got the idea that Norma killed by strangulation from TV. She said, you see that on the television, on the Apache and all that. So, I was wrong about them not having television.
Mm.
Anyways, handwriting experts said the notes were written with both girls' handwriting. In fact, every single letter had to be examined separately because Norma and Mary had alternated writing. They called it joining writing, so they'd take every second letter, kind of like every second word, whatever.
Right.
Norma testified that the idea to write the notes came about in Mary's bedroom where they were drawing with a red biro pen. Norma said Mary wanted some notes written to put in her shoes. Mary wanted them for the nursery break-in. So yeah, her, like, Mary was like, oh, I just want them so I can carry them around. But then she ended up
leaving them
behind on purpose. Mm. When Mary conceded that the notes were a joint idea to write, she insisted that it was Norma's idea to take them to the nursery. Norma said, are you coming to the nursery? And I said, yeah, away then. It's so funny. Yes, away then, because we had broken into it before. She admitted we were being destructful. What's destructive?
Yeah, destructive.
Destructful is the word she used. But it was all in fun. We thought it would be a great big joke. Norma was Fanny and Mary was the other one.
Oh.
I'm not saying it again. Fanny was first.
Yeah. In both instances.
First, and that's important. I know Norma was older, but the ringleaders go first.
Yeah.
Kids are very into the whole honorary system of, like, who goes first.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Could be age, but also if Mary was in charge, she would have nearly insisted on writing for her name first.
I think so.
I mean, I would have. I'm not letting Anya write her fucking name first. You serious?
Yeah. I'm thinking back to, like, when we were kids and stuff. I feel like I put my name first on most things because I was like, I'm going to be famous someday. You
I
do.
I get to go first.
You were so self-important when you were a child. You're meant to be. Because you were quite literally the centre of your universe and the family life universe because you're like the small child. So, yeah. No, I feel like you're right there.
Yeah.
That it says a lot that Fanny was first.
Yeah, it does. And twice as well, not just once.
Mm-hmm. Both instances it was first. And then again, back to the N turned into an M.
Yeah.
There's a lot adding up against Norma here compared to Mary, to be honest.
Oh, I agree. Mary insisted that Norma wanted to get put away and she asked Mary to run away with her. They had run off together before. When asked why Norma wanted to run away, Mary weirdly answered because she could kill the little ones, that's why, and run away from the police. So Norma's logic was, if I get placed in a child's home, I can kill the kids and then just go missing again and they'll never know who I am.
It's not bad logic if that's what you're looking to do with your life.
I mean, she's right.
She's absolutely right. If the actual homeowners could be killing the kids and getting away with it, why couldn't she?
Exactly. So despite them turning on each other, the girls had this really intense connection. During the trial, and I quote, their heads turned towards each other, their eyes locked, their faces suddenly bare of expression and curiously alike. They always seemed, by some sort of silent and exclusive communion, to reaffirm and strengthen their bond. Yet they had their moments of betrayal. They shook their heads incredulously or furiously at what one or the other said. They turned abruptly, glaring at each other when hearing themselves quoted as having accused the other of something outrageous, and they commented audibly. In Norma's case, with tears and desperate cries of no, no. In Mary's case, with loud and furious remarks about and against each other's evidence. Eventually, the judge had to prohibit contact between the two girls during the trial.
I could see that.
Yeah, both denied any responsibility for Martin Brown, but both acknowledged they had been together with Brian on the day he died. According to Mary, a maniacal Norma strangled Brian. When asked if she was afraid that Norma might kill her, Mary boldly replied, she would not dare, because I would turn around and punch her one. You're fucking dead right, Mary. I'd have boxed her too. The two of you deserve a box.
Honestly.
But Norma pissed me off. The last two times I did this fucking story, Norma pissed me off more than Mary. I don't care. I don't. She's sus as fuck.
No, because Norma's a big fat fucking liar, to be honest. Mary, yeah, obviously Mary's been like a bullshitter her whole life. But at the same time, I feel like Mary's being a lot more honest than Norma.
Yeah, Norma's playing into the whole like, oh, I'm so scared and childish and I'm crying. Yeah. Mary was like, that's fucking embarrassing. Own your shit.
Yeah, we did this, now say it.
So, Norma's grim versions of the events, however, were closer to the truth, apparently. Mary told Brian to lie down and then started to hurt him. Norma demonstrated how Mary pinched Brian's nose. He started turning purple and tried to push Mary's hand away. When she was really hurting him, she said, Norma, take over, my hands are getting thick. But Norma left, she tearfully claimed, while Brian was still alive. She then went to her friend's house where they made pom-poms, which was, I mean, really fucking random to do after you saw a child being killed, but anyways... And as well, there's the question of if she really was this upset over a child being murdered, why did she go back with Mary to make marks on the child's body?
Yeah.
She said Mary brought scissors with her because she wanted to make him baldy. And she also had a razor blade to cut into his stomach. Pissed me off, but on the 17th of December 1968, Norma Bell was acquitted.
What?
But Mary Bell was convicted of manslaughter on the grounds of diminished responsibility. The jury took their lead from her diagnosis by court-appointed psychiatrists who described her as displaying classic symptoms of psychopathy. The judge described her as dangerous and said she posed a very grave risk to other children. He said, and I quote, "In Norma, you have a simple backward girl of subnormal intelligence." I disagree. "In Mary, you have a most abnormal child, aggressive, vicious, cruel, incapable of remorse, a girl moreover possessed of a dominating personality with a somewhat unusual intelligence and a degree of cunning that is almost terrifying." If she's that domineering, if she's that whatever the fuck, dominating,
mm-hmm.
she'd have had her nickname written down first.
Yeah.
And I that's something you'd ask any child. If you ask two kids to write down their names, one after the other... the more dominant child is going to pick up the pen first and go on writing my name first.
Definitely. Definitely. Like, I don't believe... like, yeah, okay, Norma may have been thick all she wanted, but, like, I don't... that
she knew what was going on. She knew. Yeah. I don't believe that.
You don't have to be smart to be fucking crafty.
No, she knew as well as Mary.
Yeah.
Also, I'm going to say, if she's that simple, how come her fucking note of the four...
was the only one that was spelled correctly. That
spelled correctly. The mm-hmm. only one. Every single other one had... every second word was spelled wrong.
Yeah. Which are probably the words the fucking Mary wrote.
Exactly. Yeah. She was sentenced to be detained at Her Majesty's pleasure. Which is basically just infinite imprisonment. It's a case of she can be let go whenever the fuck they want. And she can be held until they say she can be let go.
Right.
She was initially sent to Red Bank Secure Unit in Lancashire, which was the same facility that would end up housing John Venables?
Venables, yeah.
One of Jamie Bulger's killers.
Yeah, oh, how did I forget? Because that was part of the fucking series that this bitch was meant to be originally part of.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, how did I get them mixed up? Yeah, absolutely, Jamie Bulger's murder.
Yeah,
lovely.
So John Venables was in that same facility 25 years later. So after her conviction, Mary was obviously the focus of a great deal of attention from the British press. And also from the German magazine Stern.
The Star.
Yeah, I just don't know why though.
Stern. Yeah, means why are the Germans involved? Like,
I don't know. Stern means star, does it?
Stern means star, yeah.
Interesting. And because of this, her mother repeatedly sold stories about her to the press and Shock. Often gave reporters writings she claimed to be by her daughter. Described by court psychiatrists as intelligent, manipulative and dangerous, Mary proved herself to be a problem inmate. In 1970, she fabricated charges of indecent assault against one of her wardens, but the man was acquitted in court. She made headlines in September 1977 when she briefly escaped from Moor Court open prison with another inmate, but the runaways were captured 3 days later. In the meantime, they met two young lads, two boys, with whom they spent the night. And this put Mary, who was very egocentric, back in the headlines. And she offered up a blow-by-blow account of how she gave up her virginity.
Oh my fucking god. She turned into her mother.
Yeah, her... well, I mean, the she attention fucking did right.
The fucking... yeah, I mean, it's not surprising, but like, she fully turned into her mum.
Yeah, 1970, and she was born in 1957, so what's that? I'm too stupid now to fucking even try and do this math. 13. Oh no, I fucked up. What? No? She was only 13.
What? When?
No, that's not right. I can't be right.
She was born
1957.
7 from what? And this is 1970?
Yeah. 1977.
1977, sorry. So she was 20.
Yeah, okay, it makes way more sense. Yep, so her penalty for this escape was a loss of prison privileges for 28 days. For a time, she lived in a girl's remand home at Cumberlow Lodge in South Norwood, which was, I don't fucking know why this is a part of my notes, but it was in a house built by Victorian inventor William Stanley. Just F fucking YI, I guess.
The right.
In 1980, 23-year-old Mary was released from Askham Grange Open Prison after serving 12 years and was granted anonymity, yeah.
Yeah.
Which includes, she was also given a new name and she was allowed to start a new life. She allegedly came back to Tyneside on several occasions and had lived there for some time after her release. 4 years after finishing her sentence, she had a daughter on the 25th of May, 1984. Exactly 16 years after she killed Martin.
To the day. That's
the girl knew nothing
gross.
Of her mother's past until reporters discovered her location in 1998, and the pair had to leave their home with bedsheets over their heads. So 1998, so her daughter was 14 when that happened.
Right. So
and everyone definitely knew who she was, like, as in some, you know, like you're in a small town where after finding out that Mary Bell lives here, and then her and her daughter had to flee the fucking, and then like your friend doesn't show up to school the next day.
Yeah.
You know what
like,
I mean?
You're putting two and two together there, like.
Exactly. Mary's daughter's anonymity was originally protected only until she'd reached the age of 18. However, on the 21st of May 2003, just 4 days before her daughter's 19th birthday, Mary won a high court battle to have her own anonymity and that of her daughter extended for life. Consequently, any court order permanently protecting the identity of a convict in Britain is sometimes known as a Mary Bell order.
Huh.
This high court ruling outraged the victims' families. June Richardson, so Martin's mother, Martin Brown's mother, said, "It's all about her and how she has to be protected. As victims, we are not given the same rights as killers." The order was later updated to include Mary's granddaughter, who was referred to as Z. After Mary's granddaughter was born, what, go on?
No, I'm with the victims' families on that. I understand Mary's daughter should be protected. It's not her fault, you know, the sins of the mother. Protect the daughter. She did nothing. But fuck Mary. But I guess then if you're protecting the daughter, you have to protect Mary because otherwise the daughter's not protected. But like, if I found out that my mother was in prison as well for having killed a load of kids, I'd be like, do you know what, ma'am? You're on your own. Like, I'd be out so
yeah,
quick.
How has she spun it? Like, has she spun it to the way of like the daughter's like, it was obviously Norma? Because I would be like, if I knew Mary in real life and she was like, it was Norma, I'd be like, that actually makes a lot of sense.
That's true.
Do you know?
And especially, I suppose, if there was like a loving relationship and stuff like that, then you're not going to be like, yeah, obviously my mom's a psychopath. Like,
after Mary's granddaughter was born, June Richardson, so Martin Brown's mom, said, "A child is a blessing, and she took my blessing and left me with a grief for the rest of my life. I hope when she looks at this child, she remembers the two she murdered. I will never see a grandchild from my son. I hope every time she looks at this baby, she realizes what my family are missing out on because of what she has done." And Mary's current whereabouts are unknown.
Cannot believe she moved back to Tyneside. That's fucking ridiculous.
Cheeky bitch, isn't she?
Honestly. That Norma was fucking acquitted.
Yeah, I think that's scandalous. I think she had just as much to do it.
Yeah, as if nothing else, she should have gone down as an accessory.
I agree.
Was complacent.
I think
like,
she did just as much. She did just as much. She was there when these kids were being attacked and everything. She knew what she was doing.
Yeah.
She knew what she was doing. I don't care. Like, I don't care.
I don't care if it's an argument of personalities. Like, if you cross the two stories over, somewhere in the middle, there's the truth. And it's both of them equally.
Yeah.
Whether Mary was the one to kill fucking the first boy or not.
Something, actually.
Because it does sound like Mary did the first kill and then they kind of went on to kill together.
Even the way he had been a victim of manual strangulation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Brian was.
Yeah.
Did Norma not, and the first young lad, so Martin, died of, I'm presuming, the drug overdose.
Yeah, because they said there was no evidence of strangulation.
Yeah.
And that would make sense, like, if he was kind of, like, bleeding and foaming out the mouth, then that would... But that's more poisoning, yeah, though.
And then Norma said that Mary only pinched Brian's nose, but he'd been a victim of manual strangulation. And I know Norma's saying, oh, I left before he was dead, but I don't believe that.
No.
I think there was a pair of them in it. Like, I'd say they took fucking turns.
Yeah, that's a very big difference between strangulation and suffocation. If she had held his mouth and fucking nose closed, that's suffocation. That's not strangulation. Strangulation is specifically wrapping something around the neck.
According to Mary, a maniacal Norma strangled Brian. And according to Norma, Mary pinched Brian's nose.
Yeah, so one of them's lying, and I think we both know who it is. Like, see, again, it's the court of public
opinion. I know Norma
is
saying that she left before Brian was dead. right? So we can say, fair enough, maybe she'd strangled him while Norma was gone. But it just sounds a bit fucking weird, especially with the whole, like, going back with Mary, mark up his body and stuff. Like, would you not just tell your parents? Like, I feel like it gets to a certain point where you're just like, ma'am, Mary's a fucking lunatic.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. There's no level of loyalty. And I was, again, like, a lonely little child desperate for friends and for, like, people to like me and stuff. So I would have tolerated all levels of shit, but not that.
But also, like, you know you're going to be believed because your dad saw her trying to fucking strangle your sister.
Yeah, like, just grass her up, like, if she's actually out here killing kids. But no, because you won't, because you were a part of it, you fucking lying little bitch. I hope she had nothing but misery and misfortune for the rest of her fucking life.
Yeah, that's my theory anyways. I don't believe the fucking... I don't believe it.
No, I'm with you. I don't think Mary was innocent, but I don't think Norma was either.
No, I don't... Mary definitely was not innocent.
No.
Which I feel like she admitted to what she did. A lot of it. Like, I feel like she definitely was like, oh, it was all Norma, and she definitely did bits as well. But I feel like Norma's pure pretending to be simple and, like, all innocent and crying and shite.
Nah, yeah. Fuck holier than fucking thou, I vibes. Like, no, Norma's a lying little fucking ratbag. In the absence of Lizzie, I will declare a ratbag bitch.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've managed to make it to 1:48. Nothing has cut off. We have still yet to see if audio quality is legible. Or not legible. You can't say legible for fucking audio. Audible? No. Whatever, usables.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
There's definitely a word that I can't think of right now with my fucking melty brain. Yeah, that is an episode that was supposed to have been released the first week of March in 2021. And it's only now that we're managing to put it out, if it makes it out.
And that's not from lack of trying.
That's not from lack of trying, no. This is the third time we've recorded this little bitch. I put all of my powers as an editor into the fucking two that we did try to record and couldn't. There was no way I could save them. There was nothing I could do. Touching all the wood here. Touch my little empty head. That this actually makes it out. But if it does, congratulations us. Very successful.
Yeah.
I don't think this counts as a session.
No, it doesn't.
No. There's not really much to discuss because it's the third time we've discussed it. Although I will say my memory loss was very beneficial in that because I had forgotten
half the deeds. I forgot about half of it. I was like, holy shit. Like the fucking random racism in the middle. I was like, ew.
Yeah, and I forgot about what they actually did. With the scissors and stuff, as soon as you were like, so there was a broken scissors next to him, and I was like, oh fuck, I just remembered what they did.
Yeah. I just tried to skim past it.
Yeah.
It's all said for the whole, like, to be truthful to it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, there's no point starting the story and not finishing it.
No, exactly. You know? That is one thing we can pride ourselves on this podcast, is no matter how fucking disgusting or difficult it has been to actually physically say the words of what happened, we give all the details that we can find.
Yeah.
No matter how bad. Like, if you want to know the fucking story, you want to know the story.
Yeah. See, I don't mind it if people don't want to go into the details, but it's like, I think it would be weird for us to suddenly stop. Because we've always been, like, about giving the straight up facts.
Exactly.
Do you know?
It's the only way we can set ourselves apart from other podcasts.
Yeah. I also feel like I wouldn't want to do a podcast where I didn't tell
the
truth.
No, like, one thing I do see a lot in the podcast group chats on Facebook is that there's a problem with the fact that they'll skirt over the details and stuff. They don't give it, like, they don't say what happened or whatever. You lose a lot of the crime aspect, like, you lose a lot of what we're studying here, which is criminal behavior at the end of the day.
Yeah, like,
you have to do it
at the end of the day, like,
yeah,
like, what's the actual point? The whole point is what they did.
Yeah. And we don't want to talk about the fucking serial killers praising them and making glorified fucking dickheads out of them. Like, no, we're going to tell you exactly how horrible and monstrous they actually were. So yeah. And that's how bad those two little bitches were. And I say two little bitches.
Yeah, I'm sick that Norma got away with it.
Honestly.
I'm sick.
That's going to make my night now just that bit more unsettled. Again.
Again. Yeah, I'm going to get into bed now. It's only 8:30. But I'm going to get into bed and go sleep.
Yeah, I'll be following you there. So, yeah. In that case, we will wish all of our listeners some sweet fucking dreams. Because we are tapping out, man. And, yeah. In the meantime, just... don't throw your kids out windows. And if you don't want them, give them up. And always be a hypocrite.
Don't forget to dance your ankles.
And join our cult.